I'm Janet Robbins. The story is called Tea Time by Inverness writer Michael Parmelee, concerning a time during the Vietnam War where Michael Parmelee himself served. He wasn't supposed to push open the door. He was the lieutenant, and he should have told one of his men to do it.
"What the?"
said Private Hardy, the lieutenant's radio man, and, by their mutual agreement, his constant shadow. Hardy looked up in amazement, quickly stood up, grabbed his rifle and radio, stumbled out of the courtyard shadows, where he and the rest of the lieutenant's platoon were resting, and grumbling and swearing, "Stupid goddamn lieutenant," raced off, trying to catch up with his lieutenant, who had slipped away from his platoon, pushed open the house's front door, and was quietly disappearing inside. The day had turned uncomfortably hot, and the platoon had been searching the village all morning, scattering chickens and children, poking through piles of uncooked rice, frightening and annoying sullen, uncooperative adults, tearing apart their homes and tossing about their meager possessions. The platoon was hot, tired, bored, irritable, and scared. No one had tripped any booby traps that day or lost any limbs. No one had been shot at by snipers, stepped on an excrement-soaked bamboo stake, or passed out from the heat. No one had, in any of the war's myriad possible ways, fallen down dead. Nor had anyone found anything suspicious or even out of the ordinary. Not that anyone ever knew what suspicious or out of the ordinary meant. On a good day, one of our men died. On a good day, we killed 10 of them. A 10-to-1 kill ratio, their dead versus our dead, meant the platoon was having a good day. By that standard, the platoon was having a hot, boring, not-so-good day. Still, the boredom and the heat, combined with the platoon's continual lack of sleep, general exhaustion and constant fear, were taking their toll. The lieutenant decided his men needed a break. "Okay," he said, "let's fall out here. Wiggett, you set security up front. Willis, you do the same back down the trail." Immediately the rest of the platoon began looking about the village for a relatively safe place with shade to flop. Maybe that was why the lieutenant walked away from his platoon. He saw the door from across the courtyard underneath the thatch veranda in the shade. Maybe he just wanted to step out of the war for a moment to stop being in charge. Maybe he was just tired of the war's daily routine, finger on the trigger, looking for trouble, looking for someone to kill. Maybe, like his men, he was just hot and bored. He was definitely scared. He scattered more chickens and children as he crossed the courtyard. He walked quietly and quickly, stepped up onto the veranda and approached the house's front door. With his right thumb, he flicked off his rifle safety. The distinct click made by the safety's release was the only warning sound he made. He used the barrel of his rifle to push open the door and entered the house. The front room was dark and cool, with wide-open, screenless windows, but he felt no hint of breeze. On the right side of the room, next to a bare wall, stood a large family-size bed, draped on top and all sides with mosquito netting. Across the room, also against a bare wall, stood a small wooden table. On it sat the family altar, a birdcage-sized house, surrounded by photos of ancient, still venerated ancestors, and small offering plates of cooked sweet rice and fresh fruit. On the table beside the altar flickered a single candle, the room's only light. As his eyes adjusted to the room's darkness, the lieutenant realized he was not alone. 4 people sat like frozen ghosts around a low table toward the room's far left corner. Instinctively, he turned and pointed his rifle in their direction. An old man was hunched forward on a low bench, his back to the gun. His wife sat on his left. Across the table, also on a low bench, sat a young man. A young woman sat to his right. Their backs rested rigidly against the room's far wall. They faced the lieutenant, and he could see from their startled look that they were as surprised to see him as he was to see them. 10 feet of open space separated the corner table from a dark adjoining room beyond. 10 feet of open space separated the lieutenant from the four ghosts sitting at the corner table. No one moved. No one breathed. No one made a sound. Then, after what seemed like a second or maybe a lifetime, the young man jumped up from his seat at the end of his low bench and tried to run out of the room. The lieutenant tracked his motion with his already raised rifle. It was like shooting trap. He had the angle. His rules of engagement were flexible. The young man was a Vietnamese male, military age, and running away. The lieutenant's language skills weren't good enough to order him back to the table. His rules of engagement authorized him to kill a young man running away. He was at war. He was expected to kill him. The lieutenant's platoon always carried a few spare enemy grenades so that, if necessary, a platoon member could salt a body that someone in the platoon killed. A properly salted Vietnamese, man, woman, or child, always meant one more enemy killed in action for the Americans that day. The visible enemy grenade also explained away any questions about the circumstances surrounding the dead person's demise. Who knew? Maybe one more enemy KIA might prove that America was actually winning the war. It could also prove that at least one American platoon was doing its job that day. The young man must have quickly realized that he had no chance of escaping the room alive, that his attempt to flee had been a horrible mistake. But he had made his choice. Fear can cause you to do unwise things. He continued running towards the adjoining room and made one last desperate leap through the air. The lieutenant waited for him to come back down to earth. His landing was perfect, delicate, one-footed, ballet-like, and exactly where the lieutenant had expected it would be. He had already marked the landing spot with the end of his rifle. He was ready, prepared. His excited trigger finger leaned anxiously on his rifle's trigger. When the young man landed, he froze. Years later, when the lieutenant had left Vietnam and had stopped being a soldier, when he had gotten a girlfriend and a sports car, when he had graduated from college and gone on to become a professional dancer, he would realize how difficult the young man's motionless, breathless, seemingly effortless balancing act must have been. Very slowly, without flexing an unnecessary muscle, the young man turned his head, looked at the end of the lieutenant's rifle barrel, and carefully lowered his perfectly extended trailing foot. The lieutenant lifted his left hand off his rifle and with it motioned for the young man to return to his seat at the table. His nervous trigger finger began to relax. His heartbeat began to slow. He watched the young man retrace his steps. The young man watched the lieutenant watching him. Hardy burst through the open door, catching up with his lieutenant. He stood still, out of breath, gulping in the cool front room air and trying to orient himself. His radio antenna had brushed the top of the door frame, and he reached up to stop it from rattling and swishing back and forth. Without taking his eyes off the table, the lieutenant said, "Everything's okay, Hardy. Go back outside and tell the platoon that we might be here for a while." Hardy looked at the lieutenant, looked at the four Vietnamese sitting like ghosts around the low corner table, saw that the lieutenant was pointing his rifle at a young man's heart, knew that everything was definitely not okay, hesitated, started to speak, and then, still holding on to his radio's antenna, slowly backed out of the room. The lieutenant watched the young woman's stare alternate between the end of his rifle barrel and his own face. Then the old man stood up and turned round, showing his face for the first time. Displaying no hint of emotion, he turned again and began walking towards the dark back room. Flexible. The lieutenant's rules of engagement were flexible. But they didn't necessarily cover the exact situation he found himself in at that moment. He watched the old man slowly disappear. Then he heard noise, kitchen noise, the sound of glass striking glass, noise, the rustle of, he didn't know what. And then the old man reappeared, balancing between his arms a wooden serving tray, a steaming pot of tea, and tea service for five. He walked directly back to the corner table, stopped, gestured for his wife to slide down her bench to make space for the lieutenant, set the wooden serving tray down on the table, and sat down himself in his original place. Then he turned to the lieutenant and gestured for him to join the table. If, as the lieutenant had been trained, it was improper to sit down at the table wearing one's hat, it was certainly improper to sit down at the table pointing one's rifle at a young man's heart. The lieutenant turned away from the table, walked across the flickering, dimly lit room, and carefully rested his rifle against the bare wall next to the family altar. He hesitated. Without his rifle, he would be unarmed. That couldn't be right. Then he turned, walked back to the table, and sat down between the old man and his wife. Vietnamese have their own very particular way of arranging their table and serving tea. By sliding away from her husband toward the wall, the old man's wife had opened up a space for sitting immediately to her husband's left. Her husband, clearly head of the table, had reoccupied his appropriate place. The seat immediately to his left is always reserved for the honored guest. The lieutenant now occupied that seat. The old man passed out five small white porcelain cups, filled the lieutenant's cup first, filled his own cup second, and then filled all the other cups, first the young man's, then his wife's, and then the young woman's. When everyone at the table had finished drinking their tea, the old man refilled their cups in exactly the same order. In Vietnam, the polite way to say, "No more thanks," is to leave your cup full. The lieutenant didn't know that then. After he had drunk his second cup of tea, the old man refilled his cup. Everyone at the table communicated by pantomime. Is smiling an act of pantomime? Then, in the middle of his third cup of tea, the lieutenant stood up, breaking the tea ritual that the old man had been so carefully maintaining. Turned his back to the table, walked across the room toward the flickering altar, retrieved his rifle, and began slowly walking towards the open front door. He stepped onto the veranda and back into the bright midday light, began blinking, looked into the courtyard shadows, saw his still sprawled-out platoon, walked across the covered veranda, stepped down into the courtyard, again scattered chickens and children, and found himself once more in a Vietnamese village. His platoon seemed surprised and not all that pleased to see him return. They were still trying to relax, still in the flop mode. The lieutenant put a back-to-business look on his face as he approached his men. "Saddle up," he announced. Reluctantly, slowly, and of course complaining, his men stood up and began loading their gear back onto their bodies. The lieutenant told Wiggett and Willis to call in their security teams. Hardy slung his radio onto his back, grabbed his rifle, and moved close to his lieutenant, who looked over his platoon and ordered it to continue on its way. You just heard there a wonderful short story by Michael Palmley of Inverness called Tea Time, as it was appearing in the West Marin Review.